Hi there, podcast listeners. Today is primary election runoff day. Go vote if you live in South Carolina. Today, we will talk Bremerton versus Kennedy, the Supreme Court case about the high school coach whose contract was not renewed due to his dangerous habit of acting like a Christian in public. Gasp. The Supreme Court threw a touchdown on this one. Is it just us, or does it seem like Democrats are really good at promoting gun ownership, even, or especially, among minorities? We'll talk about that and more on today's Christian Worldview with Tony Nostin.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Good morning to you. It is a Tuesday morning. Wow, this week, for some reason, seems like it's kind of crawling by. This is Tony Bain, Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Bridger Campus of North Cleveland University, where Christ makes the difference. Austin's going to be here. He said he'd be late, wouldn't make the opening. He hates it anyway, so, you know, it's just as well. I hope he's listening in the car, so he's cringing when he hears the opening music. What a week it's been. What a Supreme Court term it's been. In my lifetime, I don't think there's ever been one like it. And, of course, I'm 64 years old. Major decisions, incredible decisions protecting religious liberty, the right to life, just the kind of things that you would think that America would stand for. That our Constitution and the amendments to the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, all of those things point to, as summed up by Jefferson, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which can only take place, that happiness and the pursuit of it can only take place in an atmosphere of liberty, and it can only happen if you happen to be alive. And so those are bedrock foundational principles. And the right to free religious expression is certainly among them. And so, I mean, today, by the way, before we get too far down the road, today the heartbeat bill is now the law in South Carolina. It started yesterday afternoon. The court lifted the stay. Now, abortion clinics, I'm told, are going to be open today, but they will be violating the law if an abortion is performed on anyone that has a heartbeat, or that is more than 6 weeks along in the pregnancy. And let me just say this, because, you know, sometimes I wonder how far to tread on some items. But, you know, I've been accused, of course. Now, you know, the pro-life bar keeps getting moved. You're not pro-life if you work for incremental change to protect the lives of as many babies as you can. When you have an environment where the legislature, you have to pass laws in the legislature in order to protect the life of unborn children. If you're an incrementalist, in other words, in any sense, then you're not pro-life. That's the new mantra. You can say you're pro-life, but you're not. And now if you support, now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned, if you support a ban on all abortions coming to an end in South Carolina, but you don't want to lock up mothers and charge them with murder if they have an abortion, then you're not really pro-life. So, you know, I don't, the bar keeps moving about what can make you pro-life. I had someone send me an email yesterday that said, you know, if you hadn't, now you can see the worthless nature of the heartbeat bill because Roe versus Wade has been overturned. If you'd have supported the bills we wanted supported, now abortion would be outlawed in South Carolina and we wouldn't have to do anything else. You know, one thing that is missing in that logic is this. At the time, there was no way a ban on abortion was going to pass the legislature in South Carolina. It was not going to happen. We had to bend over backwards, pray, be, you know, rallies, fill the state house, the whole thing, to get the heartbeat bill passed. So how about looking at it this way? Today in South Carolina, while the legislature is getting ready to go back and ban abortions, which I believe they will do, but today, about 98% of abortions are going to be outlawed in the state of South Carolina. And that would not be true if the heartbeat bill hadn't been passed. And it would also not be true if nothing had passed And nothing would have passed if we'd have gone down the path of trying to ban all abortions before Roe versus Wade was overturned. Now, that's unassailable logic, ladies and gentlemen. You can rant, you can fuss, you can holler, and you can scream, but you cannot undermine the fact that that is a fact. Look, I know people, and I don't, this hasn't got anything to do with intelligence. It has to do with environment and experience, okay? And there's a big difference. But people like to say that when I talk about not being down in Columbia, not being there in between the House and the Senate, not talking to lawmakers, not watching the debates, not consulting with others every day, talking about legislation, knowing where senators and House members stand at any given point. And I get accused when I talk like that of saying, well, you think I'm not smart enough to understand this. Has nothing to do with intelligence. Nothing. It has to do with being present when this kind of stuff happens and being in the environment where laws get made and understanding the many, many obstacles that can be put in place and how difficult it is to actually get a law passed in South Carolina. And so when you work and achieve something like this, then it should be something that everybody can celebrate. But, you know, all or nothing, may I remind you that the second part of that is nothing, and all or nothing, more often than not, gets the second part, not the first part. If you don't get all, then you get nothing, then what has been gained? Nothing? Hello? And so when people go on these screeds, these and rants and call people like me names because I've actually been and worked on legislation that got passed into law that reduced the number of abortions. There are more babies born in South Carolina today than there have been at other times because laws have been passed that protect the lives of as many babies as we can get done under the environment that we've been in. And that's going to be today. This is going to be probably this is a great day in South Carolina because the heartbeat bill is in force today. We have a conservative attorney general who went to bat immediately within minutes of the Roe versus Wade decision being released. We have a conservative governor who's willing to sign legislation that is conservative. We have a conservative state house. You know, people like to talk about South Carolina being the bluest red state in the country. Well, you can say that, but this blue red state is going to be in session next week, beginning the process of banning all abortions in South Carolina. And until then, we'll be under the heartbeat bill, a bill that we got passed because we didn't go all or nothing and end up with nothing. We went as far as we could go. And if you know me and listen, you've listened to this show for a long time, I'm very reluctant to blow my own horn, so to speak. And as a trumpet player, that's kind of weird, right?
Do you know how many trumpet players it takes to change a light bulb?
I don't know how many.
One. They just stick it up in the socket and wait for the world to revolve around them.
Ah, well, good. Okay. So that's me.
Not. I'm just teasing.
So I'm just all I'm saying is I don't sit here and pat myself on the back except on Friday when it's back patting day, okay? And today's Tuesday. But I'm going to step out of character for a second here. And I think that it's worth, as I get jumped on by some for supporting the heartbeat bill, I want you to know that I was one of the first ones to say, why don't we pass a heartbeat bill? Because a heartbeat is something that's undeniable. it would be the most restrictive abortion law ever in the history of South Carolina. It's something that I think we could actually get through the legislature because other states have already done it. And so here we are with a heartbeat bill in place until our legislators can get a total ban on abortion. I'm thankful for every day, every minute, every second that the heartbeat bill will be in place between now and a total ban on abortion. And I'm thankful for all the people that made it happen. Now, it might have been me pushing early on, but I didn't make it happen. I just remember sitting, I remember when it happened. I remember we were sitting in a room in Columbia and we were talking about the legislative agenda and what are we going to, and I said, why don't we put the heartbeat bill on the table? It's easy for people to understand. There's a heartbeat, a person's alive. I mean, granted, that's not everything because we know, I know, you know, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, or even if you're a person who believes in logic and understands biology, a baby is a baby at conception. I get that. I've always got it. But the legislature wouldn't get it. Most of the people in South Carolina wouldn't get it. But a heartbeat, they get it. And we got it. And now it's in place. And babies' lives are going to be spared because of it. And pretty soon, abortion will be nothing but a memory in South Carolina. Can we just celebrate that and stop yelling at each other for a minute? I mean, do you think we could just celebrate that for a second? I'm just stunned, ladies and gentlemen, by some of the ways that we feel like we have to treat each other if we don't say things exactly the same way. And I'm not going to do it. I don't care if every single listener to this radio program goes and finds somebody else to listen to. I am not coming in here every day and crack this microphone and be a far-right crazy that has no concern or thought about what the reality is on the ground. I'm always going to be a solid Reagan Republican conservative trying to get as much done that makes America better, the country better, and honors my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ as I can. And if that's not good enough for you, it's good enough for me. I'm the one I got to see in the mirror every day. Okay, yesterday the Supreme Court came out with another decision that is going to be a huge decision in protecting religious liberty. And I want to say this about these decisions and why they're so important. As the culture becomes more secular, the church can live in the culture as long as the church can be allowed to be the church. As long as the culture can't dictate to the church what the church is or what the church must believe. If in a pluralistic, as Judge Gorsuch referred to when he wrote this majority opinion, came down yesterday. In a pluralistic culture, it is important that people are allowed to practice their religious beliefs and they don't have to go hide in a closet to do it. They're allowed to do that in the public square. And that's the value of this Supreme Court ruling yesterday. It's not just that Coach Kennedy was exonerated for praying. He was exonerated for praying in public. In other words, because the school district, what you have to understand, the superintendent of the school district, well, I'll tell you what, let me back up and just give you the story. Some of you may not know the story. Some of you may have forgotten. In the Bremerton School District, Coach Joe Kennedy, and he's not the head football coach. He's like the assistant coach or something, I think. I don't think he was the head coach. I think that's right. But in any event, it doesn't matter to the story, except that after the games, he decided, win or lose, he was going to go to the center, to 50-yard line, and just kneel and pray. He didn't ask anybody to go with him. He didn't tell the members of the football team, if you go with me, you don't have to run laps on Monday. He didn't say to the football team, if you go with me, you'll get more playing time. I'll favor the players that pray with me over the ones that don't. Nothing like that. He didn't say anything to anybody except to God, so it really wasn't anybody else's business, okay? So he goes and he kneels and prays. And over time, people saw him and thought, I'd like to go pray with him. We need prayer. I believe in prayer. I mean, you didn't have a flock of atheists all of a sudden go out there and say, well, this guy's praying, so I guess I better go pray too. No, these were fellow believers, other people who shared his religious convictions. They said, no, I think we'll go pray. Do you mind, coach? Can we join you? And, of course, what's the coach going to say? Get out of here? No, I've got the freedom to pray out here in the middle of the football field, but you guys, no, you don't get to. No, he said, sure. So the group started to grow. There were staff members. There were students, primarily students, that decided to join him on their own, without a demand, without any coercion, without an invitation, not even an invitation, not even a, hey, why don't some of you guys come and join me? The coach didn't even say that. Kennedy didn't even say that to him. So what happens? He gets a letter from the Bremerton County School Superintendent saying, knock it off. But we want to be tolerant. So here's what you can do. You can pray after the game, but you got to find a place inside where nobody can see you, and you can't have anybody else go with you. So in other words, we're going to let you pray in our largesse as the state. We're going to allow you to pray, but we're going to set the parameters, a la Daniel. I mean, can you hear the story and not see Daniel opening the windows, as was his habit every day?
I had not made that connection, and thank you for making that connection for me.
I mean,
it's inescapable now that I see it, but that is so interesting. This is Darius saying, you will not pray to anyone but me for the next X number
of
days.
That's right.
That is fascinating. And
when Daniel knew that the decree had been written, he opened his window, as he had always done, and prayed. And you know, and Daniel, he didn't go round up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, drag them up there, and say, you guys are going to pray with me. He just did what he does, what he had been doing, which is pray. And that's what Joe Kennedy did. And I'm going to throw this in because it is a spiritual truth. The devil hates prayer. The devil hates life. And the devil hates prayer. The devil hates the Word of God. Why? Because those are the things that are transformational. Prayer makes a difference. It is speaking to the Creator of the universe, the one who kicked Satan out of the club, so to speak. Okay? So he hates it because of what it does to the believer and for what it does in the spiritual realm to his work. I mean, if you want to stop the spread of evil, prayer is not the only thing that you can do, but it's the most that you can do until you've done it. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, there's nothing more important than prayer until you pray. And when you pray, then there are other things that can be done. It's not that other things become more important. It's just that until you pray, those other things are not going to work.
Yeah, it's like overturning Roe. Overturning Roe is not the last thing we need to do.
Right.
But we can't do those other things until we've overturned Roe.
Right. So, superintendent says you can pray as long as you do it in secret. And the coach said, nope, I haven't coerced anyone. I haven't done anything wrong. This is my First Amendment right. I'm going to continue to do it. So he was suspended. Eventually, he was fired. All the other courts said, you know, held to the party line. And by the way, the parents who complained, they claimed that their students felt pressured. Now, they weren't pressured. There was no external pressure. But the fact that the coach went out there and prayed, they felt like they were compelled because some of their students were going to pray. You know, what? So what do we do? We stop the prayer because of the feelings of some, the perceived feelings. No evidence, mind you, that any of that's going on. I mean, I'm trying to figure out these parents, if how they would react any other way that their children felt like they were being pressured. You know, Mom, I'm not going to do my chores. I'm not going to take out the trash. I'm not going to drive the way you want me to, because I feel pressured into doing these things. This is not my free will. That's ridiculous. They were never pressured. But that's always been the club, right? I mean, you swing whatever club you get, you can pick up that anybody's going to duck when you swing it. And so courts have always ducked when parents come out swinging, saying their students, oh, they felt impressed. They were being pressured. Oh, did they get letters? Did they get promises? Did they get yelled at? Oh, no. It's just that other people were doing it. I mean, most parents would go, what have you said to your kids when they said, well, everybody else is doing it? And then you say to your kids, well, if Johnny jumped off a cliff, would you jump off a cliff? I mean, just to be cliche. So in every other circumstance, the parents would look and say, well, you don't do what everybody else does just because they're doing it. But when it comes to prayer, oh, no, they're being forced to do this. We've got to go on the other side of this. And why is it? It's an animus against religion. It's hostility toward Christianity. That's what it is.
I'm flying under the guise of, let's not establish a state religion here.
Right. Now, what they mean is, you know, let's not have any Christianity because we don't like it and we don't want it. And this is a pathway that's been proven that we have to shut it down.
Short of that, it's not let's not have any Christianity. It's just like, go ahead and have your Christianity, but do it at home. Do it in church. Don't do it on the football field in public where everybody else can see you.
Yeah, but the next step, always, once you banish something from public life, mm-hmm. the next step is to banish it.
I guess
because
that's
you get
the three-step
people.
Process, isn't
that's
it?
That's right.
Marginalize, criminalize, all that you talked about before.
Marginalize, demonize, marginalize, criminalize.
Mm-hmm.
And this and that begins with, okay, if we're forbidding something to take place in public, maybe it shouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not
well reasoned?
That's the next step.
Yep.
So the court held 6-3 in favor of Kennedy, saying the school district, and this is coming from Morning Wire, which is part of Daily Wire. The court held 6-3 in favor of Kennedy, saying the school district could not stop from praying on the field. Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote the majority opinion saying, quote, now listen to this. I mean, here's a radical idea. Just radical. I mean, that Gorsuch guy, he must be a flaming Nazi because he would dare say something like this. The Constitution and our best traditions counsel mutual respect and tolerance, not censorship and suppression, for religious and non-religious views alike. Radical, commie, fascist. I mean, can I read that again? The Constitution and our best tradition, in other words, not only the Constitution, but just in practice, the way everybody lives and what's best for us to live together, counsel mutual respect and tolerance, not censorship and suppression for religious and non-religious views alike. And then I love this because Gorsuch went one step further. He also said parents who are offended by the praying should take it as a chance to, quote, learn how to tolerate speech or prayer of all kinds because it is, quote, part of learning to live in a pluralistic society. Yeah, that's exactly right. We're finally, you want to see people be able to live together in peace? Then protect the right of people who are religious to practice their faith, even if the culture rejects it. We get it. Believe me, Christians get it. We're on the outside. Paul said, be instant in season and out of season. We understand the season we're in. We're out of season. In fact, it's open season on Christians. But we can stand that. We can live in it. We can tolerate it if we'll just be tolerated when we practice our religious belief. But if you shut us down, if you try to force us into a particular belief system by the power of the state, we will not acquiesce. because not because we want to be troublemakers or contrarians, but because we're Christians and we're called to a higher standard. And our Lord and Savior is both our Savior and our Lord, not just some guy that we follow around and read some good books that he wrote. This is Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the Son of the living God, the one who opens the door to heaven, who is the way, the truth, and the life, and the only way to get to God. And we have to live by his word as believers, regardless of what the culture says. And we'll live together better if Christians are allowed to do that. Here in Greenville County, there's a runoff for Greenville County Council. And on statewide, we have one race on the ballot, and it's Superintendent of Education. So Kathy Manis and Ellen Weaver. And whoever wins this is probably going to be the Superintendent of Education. Not probably, they will be. So we're making the decision right now who's going to be the head of our schools. It's incredibly important. Please go out and vote. Look at the candidates. Know what they stand for. You know, I got into a conversation yesterday.
You?
Yeah, somebody called and we were talking about the superintendent runoff, the race.
Mm-hmm.
And this person was telling me all of the things that were, that one of the candidates, shall we say, the lack of experience, not been a teacher in the classroom, not done all these things, you know, that in your mind you stack up as being part of if you're going to have a leadership role in education. And I said at one point, I mean, they're pretty vehemently making that statement. And I said at one point, okay, how satisfied are you with the education system? This person was a teacher. And I said, how satisfied? What do you think about the way things are going? And it was pretty much a brief rant about the lack of freedom in the classroom, this, that. I mean, you know, a lot of things. So, in other words, you've got what you think has to be there, and that's not working out too well. Is that what I'm hearing? And it got quiet. And I said, you just might want to think about that for a second. The qualifications that you think that make a person, this is the person that, you know, should be there because they check all the right boxes. We've been checking boxes in the education system for a long time in South Carolina. And what have we got?
44th in the nation.
44th. So maybe we need to throw the box out. Maybe we need to get rid of the boxes.
We need to rethink the rubric.
We need to rethink.
Right?
Maybe we need to, not maybe. I mean,
so I am not, Tony, I'm not anti-elitist in my view of education. Neither are you. You've got a terminal degree. You prioritize education.
Well, I don't have a terminal degree. I almost have a terminal degree. The Doctor of Ministry is not considered a terminal degree, even though it almost killed me. you have to have, there are three essentially terminal degrees. There's the PhD, the EdD, and the MD. And I'm a dissertation away from an EdD. I've done everything except write the dissertation. So,
but you do prioritize education.
But I understand.
Education.
Yeah, education's important. I believe in it.
So it's not that we're anti-elitist or anti-intellectual or anything like that. I don't really. I'm not. That's a populist thing. Okay, is to grind your teeth against all the experts and you know to devalue expertise and all that stuff.
Not for the sake of it.
I prioritize expertise. Okay, and I give full credit to that. And but worldview matters more than expertise, especially when and leadership skills matter more than technical knowledge in a field.
And look, that's why I used this example yesterday. You don't have surgeons running hospitals, okay?
Hmm.
Surgeons operate. Administrators run hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
People who have the gift of administration, people who have vision for what a hospital is supposed to be and do. Doesn't mean, I mean, they if they walked into an operating room, most of them, they might pass out. But they understand how the hospital works and they make it work efficiently. And to me, because somebody asked me the question, would you want a doctor to operate on you that had never been in an operating room, never been a surgeon. And I said, well, the bigger question is, would you want a surgeon that operates on you running the hospital where you're going to get your care? Because the answer is no. Because a lot of times people in something can't see outside of the system in order to figure out what's wrong.
There are
because
some prior,
they're inside.
And there are some educational prior commitments going on within the South Carolina educational establishment that really hold the educational establishment
right
back. They've got a grip on those reins, and they won't give the thing its head. And I'm talking about school choice, competition. If we're free market people, we're as much free market people in education as we are in economies.
And if you are in favor of competition, if you are in favor of school choice, if you are in favor of parental involvement in the decisions that get made in school, or you want to just have a hands-off approach and let people who have the educational expertise make all the decisions related to your kids, this race, even though both are running as Republicans, the candidates are as different as light and day.
As
okay?
Light and dark.
And light and day. You know, sometimes
I just wanted to be clear here.
that was a good word of clarity. Day and night, light and dark, they're very different. Is my point?
Yeah.
So I'm just telling you, look at them, think about it.
So I'm interested. I ran some of the numbers this morning on the way here. Okay, and so I'm interested in a little bit to know how exactly those other four candidates who lost, how their voters, because obviously just a percentage of the total vote is going to show up.
Two of them are staying on the sidelines, and two of them are shifting their votes.
Can you tell me what those are? You can't.
No.
Okay.
I'm not gonna.
Right.
I mean, I'm not.
Interesting.
I do, but it's inside information.
Okay.
And so I don't.
Because depending on how those fall, like for instance, okay, this is just off of my top of my head, Kizzy Gibson would the people who voted for her, I believe, would be highly informed, highly engaged voters. You have to be to vote for somebody like that, okay?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
The reason that they chose to vote for her is because they did the homework. It seems to me like, okay, because the two top tier candidates were Ellen Weaver and Kathy Manis. So if you voted beyond that, either you just kind of guessed because you didn't know the race, or else you did your research. And I think Kizzy Gibson voters primarily go to Ellen Weaver. And anyway, if half of the people show up, there were 338,000 votes cast in the original primary race. 70,000 of those went to Kathy Manis. I can't remember exactly the number that went to Ellen Weaver, but she has to pick up a $35,000 vote or a 35,000 vote spread. And anyway, it's just going to be interesting to me to see how Travis Bledsoe's all those other voters peel off one way or the other.
Well, and here's the factor.
And this, one other one is whether or not new voters show up.
Now,
that's the wild card.
Go vote today. Okay. Hello. We're having a primary runoff. It's important.
Yep.
Know who Kathy Manis is. Know who Ellen Weaver is, and go make your choice. I mean, I just think that's critical that you do that. And here comes Wayne on the phone. Come ahead.
For the record, I did not vote 2 weeks ago as we had no local races to decide, and I just didn't think it was that important. But I was in college one year with Molly Mitchell, so I have known her in the past, as she was then, Molly Spearman now. Given her record, her defiance of Governor McMaster, and the fact that she endorsed Kathy Manis is reason enough to get me to go to the polls today and vote for Ellen Weaver. And I would also like to ask you, is the superintendent of education one of the offices we voted on years ago about making an appointment of the governor? I detest the fact that we have to elect the superintendent of education. Is this one of the offices that was put as an amendment to the Constitution to change the years some years ago, and the voters voted it down?
I don't know. I'll have to research that because I don't know.
Wayne always has questions that requires to research.
That requires
us to. I think he does that on purpose.
To go do your homework. So I'll do the homework and see what I can find out. But thanks, Wayne. I appreciate the call. Okay, let's talk about black and other minority gun ownership.
I thought we were going to talk about baseball.
Now, we'll talk
a little small talk. Sorry.
Talk about baseball.
You want to talk about baseball?
Yeah. No, not right now.
Okay.
But the reason that I want to talk about this is because I tentatively came to the microphone one day and said, you know, this is not backed up by any statistics, but when I go into the place where I normally go to look at guns, I'm seeing a lot of minorities buying guns, something that I haven't seen before. And you have to be careful in the world that we live in today because, well, you're a racist. Why were you paying attention? Well, because it's a change. That's why. Norm, what do you see in a gun? When you go in a gun store, what do you see? White males.
40-year-old white men.
Yeah. Or
with beards.
Yeah.
And beer bellies.
Well, come on now. There are men in there that are mostly Caucasian.
That's right.
And sometimes women.
Yes.
I mean, I see more when I go to the range.
Motorcycle women.
They're not motorcycle women. When I go to the range to hone my skills.
Are you sure you want to talk about this with me?
No. I'm becoming certain I don't. But
right,
I've got this
serious.
In front of me.
I'll be serious now.
So anyway, I go. I go and I see more women. That
yes.
are on the range mm-hmm. learning to shoot. And by the way, women are excellent shots. I don't ask me what it is, but my daughter, when she first bought a gun for her and she starts shooting, I'm like, it took me a while to get to the, to be this good. She's just picking up a weapon. Something about it, I don't know. But anyway, so I made the observation. Well, now,
yep.
Right. Now, according to the National Shooting Sports Foundation that decided to go out and see, they keep numbers on stuff like this mm-hmm. about who buys guns, who owns guns, who is it. More black Americans are choosing to purchase guns. This was a story that came from Daily Wire today. Gun sales to black Americans rose 58%
wow.
in 2020.
Wow.
58%. That's according to the National Shooting Sports Foundation. In the first quarter of 2021, 90% of gun sellers said they saw an increase in black customers. 80% of retailers said they saw an increase in the number of black women who purchased guns. Last year, about 25% of black Americans owned a gun. That's a jump from 14% just 6 years ago. So in other words, gun ownership among black Americans has almost doubled in just a few years. The spike began in 2020, but it doesn't show any signs of slacking off. Some black Americans who were interviewed by NBC about this story said they were buying guns to protect themselves from two areas, being targeted by hate crimes because of race, but because of crime in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two things.
Mm-hmm.
And they really were running kind of side by side. Philip Smith founded the National African American Gun Association in 2015. In 2020, it began picking up 1,000 new members a month. There are now 48,000 members across the country. He said, quote, "This is a movement in a certain direction, and I think it is a good direction." Now, the NRA has begun marketing specifically now to African Americans and other minorities. And other groups are promoting black gun ownership to protect families against rising crime in urban areas. What about other minorities? Is this just a trend among black Americans? Well, 2020, Asian American gun ownership increased by 43%. And Latino gun ownership increased slightly more than black gun ownership by 49%. Overall, 40% of all gun sales in 2020 were to first-time gun buyers. 40%. That's incredible. White men are most likely to own guns. About 50% of that group says they own at least one firearm. So there you go. It wasn't my imagination. Minorities are buying guns. And
that's for the good.
Well, I think it's for the good, and I'll say this too. What does that mean about how minorities are going to feel about the Second Amendment? What does that mean about the possible political ramifications of large numbers of minorities now feeling like that they should have the freedom to own a firearm, when the Democrat Party is the party of no? They don't want the Second Amendment. They want guns confiscated. They don't want anybody to have a gun.
I'll tell you what it doesn't mean. Nothing. It doesn't mean nothing. I don't know how much it will mean.
Good.
But it's more than nothing.
Perfect. That's exactly right. All right, Everett's on the phone. Go ahead, Everett.
Hey there. So the question about the superintendent of education.
Yeah.
Yes, there was a constitutional amendment. It was voted on in 2018.
Good.
And the voters did not ratify that change to the Constitution.
Okay.
And it wasn't close.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, I understand that a lot of people would prefer that the governor appoint, because you go out and elect a governor, you put all your eggs in one basket, so to speak, and you try to elect a conservative governor that then has the ability to govern as a conservative across the board. But most people say, nope, I want to vote directly for different people, so that, you know, we may make a different decision about one office than we do another, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons for the change there was they were trying to give the governor more authority, more power.
Right.
I mean, our governor position is one of the weakest in the United States.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the legislature has most if not all the power.
Yeah.
Not all, but most of the power. And there was a change. There was a desire to change some of that, to shift it, to give the governor a little bit more authority, and to be so that way you could hold somebody accountable on it. So.
Right. Right. Well, but then, of course, the question is, hold the person that has the office accountable, you know, that go and vote and understand the relationship between the person who manages all the education in South Carolina and the state of education in South Carolina, and go make the decision based on that. So anyway, Everett, thanks. I appreciate the call. Yeah, it's been an ongoing debate and discussion about the power of the governor. I think the governor in South Carolina should have some more power. I'm comfortable with the legislature having the most power.
Because it's a diffusion.
Right.
We like diffusion of power.
Exactly. And I want the legislature to have the most power.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the governor needs more power in South Carolina, because it's unbalanced right now. You've got
Harvey Peeler is the most powerful man.
He's the most powerful
right
man
right.
in the state,
right.
Because he's chairman of the Finance
mm-hmm.
Committee in the Senate,
mm-hmm.
and that may be true even if you give the governor more power.
Right.
But the gap between what the governor can do with his office and what the legislature can do is too wide, in my view. It needs to be closed a little bit.
Regardless of the gap, I say we bring Everett on staff as our researcher. So
well,
that's my
yeah,
vote.
He pretty much is, because I mean, I go through Everett's electables every time it comes
Wayne
out.
Is our question asker, and Everett is our
is
question answerer.
Yeah, there
okay.
you go.
Our staff is growing here.
Yeah, we're in the double Christian worldview today, where the points can really change.